Say when.
Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. And remember, we are the Resistance, and it is so good to have you with us today. Eric, good to see you. Eric, are you there? He's coming. Here we go. He was doing a jog around the block here.
Hello.
There he is. Man, what'd you do over the weekend?
Oh, man. Nothing really. Kind of just hung around the house. Some swimming. Nothing too exciting.
Swimming? I haven't been swimming in, I couldn't tell you how long. It's been a long time. Did you watch any movies?
I started to watch a few. This is what's kind of got me lately is these series. Some of these series are so good that they're almost better than movies. So I don't. Oh,
I want to see.
Everyone heard that?
What's that called? Was it Yellowstone or?
Yeah, Yellowstone, man.
Yeah, someone said that's really, and there was, I forget what it was called. There was like 18 something. It's like the prequel to it. 18. I don't know.
They've done a few prequels, but what's his face, man? Kind of.
Costner?
Yeah, he dropped out of it. So
that's what I heard.
Yeah, I haven't even watched the last season because it's supposedly divided into two halves, like the first half, and then like, oh, here's the trailer, but he doesn't come back. So I'm like, well, what the heck?
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to watch that. That little beginning, I said, hey, Eric, I go, start this thing after I say when. That was from one of my favorite movies of all time, which was Tombstone. And didn't Costner play in Wyatt Earp? Didn't he do his own Wyatt Earp movie? I think he did.
Just recently, I read something where he just released a movie and it was kind of a flop.
Well, he did this one, I think, the Wyatt Earp. After Tombstone came out, I think he did his version of Wyatt Earp. But I still love going back. I love the original Tombstone movie that, you know, with Sam Elliott, can't see the forks for the trees. That guy's voice is like, oh, it's incredible. Yeah, if I could have anybody's voice, that's the voice I would want to take.
Sam Elliott.
He was in Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome. Yeah,
he was.
In that movie. Yeah, his characters are just rough and tumble and just, yeah.
Did you watch the new Roadhouse? Do we talk about
that? I've seen it like on, I don't know if it was on Amazon Prime. I haven't watched it. Was it any good?
I don't know, man. It was okay, I guess. I don't know. That's the thing about having these on streaming services. You don't feel like you're out anything but your time.
Right.
But right. I do think cost is a variable. You know, if you go to Pizza King and it's like $25 or $30, you know, it's got to be outstanding. But if Pizza King was $10, you'd be like, this is the best pizza in the whole world.
Well, we go on there sometimes. We don't, you know, buy movies very often off of there, but it's a lot cheaper than going to the movie theater. So sometimes it's nice. You can just kind of lay around the house and watch some movies. And I told Stacy the other day, I asked her, I said, have you seen Tombstone? She goes, no. And I said, well, that's going to be one of the next ones on our list. You know, luckily, you know, if I ask her, she's pretty cool. She's like, you know, whatever you want to watch. I'm like, seriously? You know, she can watch her romance novels on her iPad or something. But when it comes to our movie night, she's great with just saying, man, whatever you want to watch.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty cool.
So,
well, this weekend I was... I spoke in, I think it's called St. Paris, Ohio. I did an outdoor fair on Saturday, and I did music a little bit for the first time in a while. I don't do much music anymore, so it was kind of neat to, you know, for the week. He asked me if I would do some when I got there. I said, man, I'm not doing live singing much anymore, but I worked a couple songs, and it was really neat. But, man, I got done, and it was so windy. There was a couple of tunes I couldn't remember everything, so I kind of had a chord chart kind of taped down where you weren't supposed to be able to see it on my keyboard. And the wind was just wailing. And it kept blowing the thing, and I'm thinking, I'm going to be right in the middle of this song, and there goes the page. But luckily, that didn't happen. But it did pour rain. As soon as I was done speaking, I go to sit down because they had somebody else that was going to be doing some music. And, I mean, it just, skies opened up. I had to go run over to my book table and t-shirts, and I had to pack them up really fast. And they had like $100,000 worth of sound equipment that was out in that rain that they had to, everyone came running to try to pack it up. And I said, you know, what's going to happen? He says, well, we're going to have to let it dry out for about a week now. So we had to move the event indoors, but you know, everything went great. Sunday morning, I got a chance to speak at the small church they had there, which was so personal. Loved it. Did a little bit of music that day too. And I wanted to make some of you guys aware, because I get requests, you know, where are you going to be speaking next? If it's near me, I want to try to see if I can come see you. And so I'm going to let you know about a place I'm going to be speaking. It's going to be, it's September 27th, 28th, and then the 29th, I'll be on a Sunday morning. But this is a men's retreat, and it's in Sullivan, Illinois, is where I'm going to be speaking. So some of you can remember Don Higgins was in one of my earlier podcasts. It's still the second most listened to podcast that we've ever had. And so he's going to be on here in a few weeks again. We're going to talk about this men's retreat. But he had gotten a hold of me and said, would you be willing to come over and do this, you know, this men's retreat we have? I think they had guys show up like last year from like 9 different states. So, man, if you guys have any interest in coming, it'll be great. You know, a lot of the stories and the teaching that I do here, I have it put together in a retreat format, which is what I do for these men's retreats. And so it's going to be, let's see. I'm trying to remember what the details are. I think it's $35 per person, which is really cheap, because with that price, on Friday night, you're going to be getting a steak dinner. And on Saturday morning, they're going to have a ton of biscuits and gravy and a ton of bacon. And the other thing that's really cool is Don's going to be donating a brand new, fully loaded, you know, ready to hunt Matthews bow. So there are spots available for like tents and campers, but you really do need to call ahead. And the contact person for that, his name is Curtis Clayton. And let me give you his phone number real quick. It is 217-254-1409. So it's going to be an awesome men's retreat. So bring your buddies, you know, get your tents, your campers, come on out. It's going to be a lot of fun. I was telling Eric when we first started this today, I had to get an MRI for something that was possible concern for the last few weeks. And I can praise God today. I got the results back and everything was negative. That's a good thing. So let's just leave it at that. So I'm really kind of a happy camper about that. But, you know, you just get one thing going and you find the good news. Well, last week I was lifting weights and I was doing these cable crunches, you know, where you've got the bar like you're doing the cable pull downs, but you're doing crunches with them. And when you know, the cable snapped and that bar with all the weight just launched like an arrow, you know, off the bowstring and hit me across the top of the head with, I don't know how many hundreds of pounds worth of force. I mean, hit me right across the back of my melon. And it rang I've never been hit that hard in my life. You know, it's kind of, I probably shouldn't say this. You know, I called my wife real quick and I said, babe, I said, I just had this happen. I'm getting a hold of you in case I black out. I honestly thought I'd split my skull open. I mean, I got hit that hard. And, you know, somebody asked me, did you go in and get checked out yet? And, you know, I had those two events over the weekend and I thought, well, you know, I kind of sat there for a while and I felt like I was all right. But I probably still need to go and get checked out. I got my right eye kind of floating around like an ice cube in a glass of hot water. So it's probably something I need to get checked out. Anyhow, you know, when I got up this morning and I was feeling, you know, a little bit weary from the weekend. You know, I was out in the sun all day Saturday speaking and singing, and then Sunday. And then we went to the Indiana State Fair last night after I got home, which was the final night of it. But when I got up this morning and I'm feeling, you know, really beat up, and I was kind of feeling a little bit sorry for myself, kind of a deal. And I remembered a story that my friend Wade Nolan, who passed away about 5 years ago, and you've heard some stories of us on here before, really one of my best friends ever. And he had a story he put in his book, and I brought the book with me. You can still go on, I believe, on Amazon and get this. And I'm sure the profits go to his family, which they would really appreciate. But it was called Death Dance, was the name of it. You can see that brown bear. I don't know if you have a glare on there or not, but you can see the jaws of this brown bear. I wrote the foreword to this book, and I'm going here saying, man, I've sat around hundreds of campfires with this guy, and I'll never be able to compare to the amount of stories he had. But I was remembering, as I was kind of bellyaching this morning, a story he had in there, and I think it's really an amazing story. And I wanted to share that with you this morning. So Wade lived in Alaska for a lot of years. You know, he filmed brown bears on Kodiak Island. I was on Facebook today, Eric, and I noticed too where it was 12 years ago today. There's a picture of me sitting beside the Russian River, drinking some Gatorade or something. I was having breakfast as we were filming brown bears. It was 12 years ago today. Just, man, I am so grateful for the adventures God's allowed me to have. But Wade lived up there for many years. He's one of the men I've mentioned to you before that really did mentor me. He was mentored by an Athabascan Indian, and he worked with me a lot in the wilds with a lot of stories that I've had, everything from Alaska to Africa. You guys have heard a lot of him on here. But on this one particular trip, now he used to, years ago, he was kind of a manager at I think it was an Alaska Airlines thing somewhere up in Alaska, duh. And because he was managing this one area or whatever the building was where it was, he got to be able to fly to a lot of these really cool places in Alaska for free. If there was room on the plane, he could jump on and go on it. Well, on this one trip, he met a man who was going to be flying back, you know, into the wilds. And this guy, I'm trying to remember, he was on the west slope of the Brooks Range is where he was headed to. And he was a real, real loner. And he was like over 300 miles away from the closest town. And so when Wade was telling me the story, he says, you know, I get on this plane. He says, I saw this guy in the terminal before we get on the plane. This plane only seated like about a dozen people. And they had removed the seats so they could put more gear and stuff in here. I think so. There was just the two of them in the back of the plane. But he saw this guy in the terminal. And it caught his attention because the guy had a hooded jacket on, and it didn't have the wolf ruff around the face part of the hood. It was Wolverine, and kind of that chestnut kind of a color. And there's not very many people that have, you know, a Wolverine ruff. Wolverine, tough to find, tough to trap, mean as they get. And so he noticed that right off the bat. So he was kind of curious, but he didn't, you know, pay attention too much because he was getting his stuff on the plane. He said, so I get on the plane and I'm getting buckled in, and the guy was off to my right, and he noticed that the ruff again, and he looks over and he sees the guy's hands on the armrest because there wasn't much room on this thing. He said it was about like 3/4 the room you'd normally have on a regular plane, so it was tight. He says, I looked down and the guy, I could see his hands, and on the backs of his hands were these huge raised purple and pink scars all over them. And he sees that and he's like, what in the world? And so the man pulls his ruff back and he can see his face looks the same way, maybe even worse. And so not knowing how to open up the conversation, you know, it's one of those awkward things. How do you, you know, open up a conversation with something like that? This is Wade. He just kind of looks at the guy, leans over to him and he goes, I'll bet you didn't get those cutting yourself shaven. The guy just kind of looks at him, gives him this little look, and he says, no, it was a little bit worse than that. So this guy's name was Gus. And he was a trapper. He wanted to get away from, you know, the rest of the world. He wanted to be away from all the tourists and everything. He was kind of a loner. And so what ended up happening, you know, this guy, when he first sees him, like I said, he had this trapper's jacket on, and he's got like what they called like the bunny boots, the really, really heavy ones that trappers would wear. And so Gus begins to tell him that he had a small cabin that he had built, like I said, 300 miles away from the closest town. And he'd handmade this thing out of some pines in the area. And his location was an unnamed mountain at the end of an unnamed lake, because he didn't want anyone knowing where he was. There was no one around anywhere that anywhere near him. And so what he did was he had a trap line that he would run. It was about 100 miles worth of trap line that he would run. And every so many miles, he would have like little trapper cabins, small cabins that he would like 8x8 or something that he would build. And he would always have these things set up so that if you had to be there overnight for an emergency, he would leave a little tiny bit of stuff in the fire. Like I'm trying to think what I think it was called a shepherd's wood stove is what they had. And then he had a kerosene lantern and he had a bunk, but he would leave it set up so in an emergency, you know, you could have a single match, you could get this thing going. Because it can get, you know, 50, 60 below in the wintertime, and that's something you can't be caught out in. And he would use these cabins, you know, he would be trapping, whether he was doing fox or mink or whatever he was doing, and he would bring these back to this cabin on his trap line, and he would go ahead and skin everything out right there, spend the night, get up the next morning, hit his trap line, move on to the next line cabin. And he wasn't using a what some people call them snowmobile, some call them you know, a sled, different things. He was using a pull sled with snowshoes. I mean, this is old school. This guy was rough. They don't do it much like that anymore. But he would have, you know, his survival equipment that he would put in these cabins in case he had to have it. And back at his main cabin, he would bring things in at the beginning of the season because he would go early and he would set up for fall hunts. So he would bring in things like a canvas tent that he could pack somewhere and set it up maybe to like a little spike camp kind of a deal where he could be set up. So he had purchased this canvas tent and he had this at his main cabin. And along with that, he had purchased a canvas sewing kit. And in the sewing kit, there was this long curved needle made for tents, right? And so if he needed to make any, you know, repairs to the thing when he was out there, that he would have this. So as he begins to tell the story, he says, I'm running my trap line. And he said, I would get to my trap setups and I would notice that something had gotten there before I did. And they were stealing, you know, anything that I had trapped. And he noticed, he began to look at the tracks of what was taking his stuff. And here's the thing, a wolverine, their tracks are kind of unmistakable because they're kind of a little bit angled the way that they walk. And you can see the big claws. You know, they're not that big of an animal, but they'll back a brown bear down. I mean, these things are fierce. And you've probably heard some really great stories about them. Well, he noticed that this thing was coming in and it was taking his game. So there's a different set you can do on traps when you're trying to get wolverine. So he was trying to outsmart this wolverine. And he was trying to get ahead of this thing so he could set traps up. Well, as he's putting his what he had left with these animals that he was able to trap, he put them on his sled, and he's making his way, trying to get ahead of the wolverine for the next one. And when he gets to where the next trap is, he's going to be setting it up, he began to see that the sky was really changing. And I've said this before, you know, in Alaska, you can make one mistake. You know, Mother Nature's fierce. You can make that one mistake, but the second mistake is going to kill you. And he remembered from being up here before that there was on one of these valleys, these mountain where there was a little chute of rock coming out, that there was an overhanging rock. And he thought, you know what? This storm is not going to go away anytime quick. And it's going to get, I mean, you can get, you know, chest deep snow overnight. It can be terrible. And he's like, I got to get in that thing. So he grabs his .22 rifle and he's realizing maybe I should take some of the stuff with me. What supplies am I going to need in case I get trapped there for a day or two? Realizing he doesn't have the amount of food he needs, he looks up and he sees these ptarmigan. Now, ptarmigan are like a grouse, and they can change colors. So they're pretty white, and they blend in with the snow really well. And they're so difficult to see. You'll see like one ptarmigan, and you don't realize there's maybe four or five in the same area. So he takes his .22, and he shoots this ptarmigan, and about four other heads just turn sideways when they hear the shot. And then he sees them, so he shoots like three ptarmigan, goes up and grabs them. He goes ahead and leaves his sled there with all the stuff on it, grabs these ptarmigan, you know, they're dripping blood, and he makes his way over to this rock ledge that I was telling you about, and he gets underneath and he gets back, and it was dug out, probably either by a wolf or a bear had used it, and he gets tucked up underneath this thing with the snow now, you know, really starting to come down. And he's got these ptarmigan, and he kind of lays the ptarmigan out by his feet, out where the rock, the cropping would be. You could look straight down and see the ptarmigan, but really not see his feet. So he's been in here for a few hours, just kind of trying to stay warm. He's got his big mittens on, and he's got that ruff pulled up over his face and trying to stay as warm as he can. Well, about that time, the wolverine had come along where his sled was and can smell the blood and follows the blood drops from the ptarmigan that he had been carrying, and the wolverine steps out on the top of this rock outcropping and looks straight down and sees these three ptarmigan laying there. Well, of course, immediately he can't resist. This wolverine drops straight down on top of the ptarmigan. Well, it scares Gus. And so, not knowing what it is, Gus kicks. Well, unfortunately, he kicks the wolverine, and it's now game on. And this wolverine just spins around and comes flying up at him as fast as he can. And it's biting through his gloves. And Gus is trying to hold on to this thing, trying to keep it away from his face. Like I said, these things don't know when to stop. They will not quit. And it's pulling his gloves off. It's biting and ripping and tearing. And now his gloves are off. Now, you've got to imagine, it's like 20 below zero at this point. This thing is biting through his fingers. Sorry to be so graphic. But as he shoves it off, the Wolverine comes back, and you know that little zipper you have on a jacket, how it's got that little hole in the zipper part of it? Well, the Wolverine gets his claw stuck in that, and the Wolverine thinks that Gus has him. And now, I mean, it's just razor blade claws all over his face. It's biting his face. It's biting his hands. And this goes on for a couple of minutes until eventually he kicks this thing off. The thing grabs a ptarmigan, looks back, and just leaves. Well, Gus he's in bad shape. And he looks down, and he's like a fountain. I mean, he's just bleeding from everywhere. He tries to get his gloves back on over top of what is bleeding and trying to stop the bleeding as fast as he can. He had a scarf. He tried to wrap it around his face, trying to get the blood stopped with that. And he realizes that there's no way he can stay there. He's going to have to go out in the storm. And so he's trying to get to one of these trapper cabins, but then he realizes, I don't have any medical supplies with me. They're back at my main cabin. So he would, in his snowshoes, he left his sled, everything. He's trying to make his way back. He would pass out from the loss of blood, fall face down into the snow. He'd wake back up, get back up again. Now, you have to remember, this time of the year, you have almost zero light. So most of this journey that's happening is in the dark. And he'd fall down, pass out again from lack of blood. He's getting back up. Well, he eventually makes it all the way back to his main cabin. And when he gets inside, he did have it set up. So all he had to do was have a single match. That's what they do. Whenever you're going to have a dangerous situation, you have everything set up for the in-case type stuff. And so what he does is he takes that single match and he goes ahead and he lights that fire and gets things rolling. But he realizes he has lost so much blood that he's probably not going to make it unless he can do something, you know, drastic. He didn't have any kind of a regular needle or thread or medical supplies like that, but he remembers that he had just bought that tent repair kit with that long curved tent needle, and he had some wax thread that you would be putting in there on a tent like this, and that's all he's got. And so without any other options, he takes his gloves off, and now he said his fingers were all like the size of sausages. And you know, you've got the glove and everything is sticking, and he's having to clean this off with incredible pain. And he begins to try to sew his hands up, and the pain would get so severe, he'd black out again. He'd fall, he'd wake up, and his head would be on the table. He'd pick his head up again, and he'd realize, and that he has to keep working, and he'd start sewing some more. And then eventually, he gets the mirror, and he puts it up on the table where he's working, and he looks at his face for the first time, and he is in total disbelief he's unrecognizable. But he knows at this point, you know, I'm probably not going to live, but I'm going to at least make an attempt at this. And with that curved tent needle, he begins to work on sewing up his face. Now, there's nobody near. He doesn't have any kind of a cell phone out there. You're not going to have any kind of a signal. He didn't have any, probably, I think they call it a PLB or whatever. Didn't have that kind of a signal to be able to send out. But what is amazing is he finally puts one more log on the fire, and he goes and he crawls in his bunk, realizing this is probably the end. But there was a mailman who just happened to see the weather had cleared, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to fly back in here and see if Gus might be around his trapping cabin. He's probably out running the line, but I'm just going to check. And as he flew over, he sees a tiny little bit of smoke coming from that trapper's cabin, lands the plane, goes in, and he finds Gus. He's able to get Gus out of there, get him on the plane, get him to safety. Gus decided not to go ahead and have plastic surgery done. He goes ahead and has them just go ahead and stitch up the rest of what he had. But remember, Gus is telling my friend Wade this story. And so now you're seeing all these scars on this man. And you're going, this happened the year before. Why would he be going back into the wilderness to the same place that just about took his life? Why would he ever do that? It's because that's what made him tick. You know, that thing in his life, that he loved to do, his purpose, is the thing that drove him to run this heavy trap line, even with just snowshoes on, and to go back after everything like that had happened to him. Why would anybody ever move back into an area where maybe you've got some bad memories, things happened to you? It's because you decided not to allow those things to stop you from doing the very thing that you're passionate about, that you absolutely love. Guys will come up and ask me, how do I know what my purpose is? And I'll say, what's that thing you can't not do or you would find yourself curled up under an underpass somewhere. And that was what Gus had. This is what made him tick. So let's kind of bring this from the wilds back to the home front, you know, for a second. And so here's the question I just want you to unpack for yourself. You know, what is it that makes you tick? You know, what hardships or trials would you be willing to face and overcome to keep doing what you love and that you're passionate about? Because if you can discover that, you really have found your purpose, or at least a part of your purpose. So what is standing? You know, what's standing in the way of you living out your passion and your calling? You know, what are those roadblocks that you haven't been able to overcome and on your own? You know, you need someone to walk with that's got your back, that has your best at heart, that is willing to pour their life into yours and probably help you become a better version of yourself than you could ever do for yourself at all. That's what it looks like when you have someone who really loves you, is in your life, and cares more about you than you care about yourself. It's that bush pilot that came in and found Gus and said, I'm going to get you out of here. I shared last week on here, you know, I had my own personal, I've had real shipwrecks and I've had, you know, life shipwrecks, you know, where I've made my own mistakes, where I thought there's no way that anyone will come and seek me because, you know, they're going to see what my sin was and go, you know what, why would I ever move toward you? It was because they didn't see my sin. They saw me. And why? Because they've had sin of their own and someone walked into their life. They've had that person come in just like the bush pilot did to check on them. No matter what, they were going to get you out of there. So whatever it takes to get you back on your feet again is what I want you to think about focusing on now as we kind of wrap this up. Because you've been given one life. You've been given a purpose. And when you find that thing that you are so passionate about that you can't not do, don't stop. Don't quit. Do not make excuses. You know, find a way to get back on your feet. Get on your knees and then get on your feet. Discipline yourself to make the main thing the main thing. I was talking with some guys this week and they said, you know, how did you, at 63 years of age, how have you been able to keep lifting and doing what you're doing? And I said, because I'm not going to make excuses. I get up and I do the next right thing every single day. And why can I do that? Because I have a God that says I do not need to fear, that He has an amazing purpose for my life. And I'm going to walk into that no matter what He sends me to, where He sends me to. Because to live is Christ, but to die is gain. So what do we have to fear? So what is it that you're wanting to do? Maybe you're afraid. You're looking for someone to help you with it. I said this last week. If you're looking for a coach, someone to help walk you back with that, go to unleash.men and go to resources, and you're going to see coaching on there. Send me your information. I'll get back in touch with you, and we're going to keep moving you forward. Don't allow the attacks of the enemy, no matter how harsh they have been, to ever hold you back from the thing that you feel called to and that you are most passionate about. We can do this together. Become a part of the resistance, and let's put this right back in the face of the enemy, and let's become the best you that you can become. We'll see you next time.